Welcome to another episode of Mike M's Collector's Corner, which is in the front of Mike M's Weekly Reads. I want to talk about some more books that were purchased during Baltimore Comic Con 2016. And in that batch, we have Green Lantern number 71. It has him like with his hand over his brow, and it says, "I'm the most powerful man on Earth. Yet I'm powerless to save this city from dying." So, we got... I don't have these in order, unfortunately. I have number 27, which is a 12-cent issue. And it has Green Lantern, help. You're the only one who can save us from the terrible thing that happened to us. And it's a bunch of ghosts of a bunch of dead people. And the woman is saying, how can he save us when he can't even see or hear us? Mystery of the Deserted City. Green Lantern. And then we have Green Lantern number 37. This is Evil Star issue, where Green Lantern is fighting a bunch of evil, little evil stars and Evil Star. And Evil Star appears to suck the ring right off his finger using a contraption and put it on his own. And Green Lantern is saying, Hal Jordan, he's yanked the power ring off my finger. There goes my last chance to overcome Evil Star and his band of starlings. The plot to conquer the universe. And then we have... I wasn't missing too many of these Green Lantern, Green Arrows. There's only one more that I'm missing. That's it. And then I have all of them. This is Green Lantern, Green Arrow, number 81, which continues off the Green Lantern series. And it is guest starring Black Canary in the population explosion. And then we have, as I try to march towards a full run of Hawkman, we have Hawkman number 17 and number 24. Hawkman number 17 has a villain. It says, the ghost of Edgar Allan Poe haunts Hawkman as he falls victim to the ruse of the Robbing Raven. And that's the Robbing Raven that's attacking Hawkman with art by Murphy Anderson. And it's interesting because I bought this in Baltimore, and Baltimore has the gravesite of Edgar Allan Poe. How about that? The Raven, author of The Raven, Telltale Heart, which always used to scare the crap out of me. Hawkman number 24 has your choice, Hawk Girl. Either you join us or Hawkman dies. And it's like she has to join this alien race or Hawkman's going to die by some kind of bird, it looks like. We then have the Atom number 8. And it has Dr. Light on the cover. And it says, lock up in the lethal light bulb, featuring the amazing villain of Dr. Light. We have Atom number 35, which is the plight of the pinup Atom. And it has somebody like that collects butterflies and bugs, you know, and pins them to like a collector display. It has a spot for the Atom, as some guy's got tweezers and he's going to put the Atom up there. I get really close to completing my Justice League run. Now, this one is in VG. It's number 11. It's a pretty old copy. It's not in bad shape, but the cover looks like it's got sun damage, like it's lost some of the color. Like some of the people that sell comics, they'll put, as a no-no, they'll put like a comic on display and it'll get lots of sunlight and it has like fade on the cover. Not good. But other than that, it's in really good shape. It's a 12-cent issue. And it looks like there's a villain there that says, as soon as I imprison the Justice League in these flasks, I will begin my one-hour conquest of the Earth. And he's sucking Green Arrow into the flask. He already has John Jones in there, Batman and Superman. And he's getting ready to put in the Flash, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, and Green Lantern. We have Flash number 26. Four worlds to conquer, Despirio, and he says, ha ha, the instant Green Lantern uses his power ring to save his fellow members from the hourglass traps, he'll cause himself to be trapped in the same way. And it's got Martian Manhunter, Batman, Flash, and Aquaman trapped in hourglasses. We then go to another purchase of Justice League number 28. This one I keep seeing all over the place. It's like a labor union thing. But it's got them protesting or picketing. They're picketing. It says, "Lift the ban on Superman." And then Wonder Woman and Green Lantern are holding up a sign that says, "The GLA demands the right to work." I guess they've been taken away from being the Justice League. And Aquaman's holding up a sign, "Protect our super rights." And Flash says, "Earth unfair to organize superheroes." The Atom is holding up a balloon that says, "Unfair." We again got Justice League number 31, electrifying announcement, Hawkman joins the Justice League. Riddle of the Runaway Room. It's like a table, and Green Lantern is holding the Flash. Flash is holding Batman. A really funky drawn Batman, I may say. He looks really chunky in there, and he looks like he's got diaper underpants, but other characters look great. He's holding Wonder Woman, and I love that costume when she has the boots that are like the laces. I think that's awesome as hell. And then she's holding Hawkman. We then have Justice League 94. Oh, I have more Flash issues. Wow, I forgot to do those. We have Justice League number 94, which has "I'm taking control of Aquaman's body." It looks like a dead man. Anyone who tries to stop me dies, but it may not be dead man. It sure looks like him, but he's not as colorful. He's like in ghost form, so it's hard to tell. And then it says, "The exclusive, the secret origin stories of Sandman and Starman." And on the side, it has the faces of the Justice League of Superman, Batman, Green Arrow, Black Canary, Atom, and Aquaman. Okay, here's a big purchase. I was looking for an affordable copy of this, and this is not an easy one to find. At least for me, it hasn't been. This is probably in VG Plus, somewhere around there. It is beautiful pages. The cover is all intact beautifully. The binding is solid. But there is definitely some sun damage on this cover. Maybe it was on display in a comic shop that the sun was just shining on it for a long time. So there's a lot of fade on it. But other than that, man, shoot. That could go into the fine condition. But it's the first annual of The Flash. And it has famous Flash firsts, featuring the origin stories of heroes and villains of the Flash Hall of Fame, featuring Elongated Man, Catmos the Metal Monarch, Mr. Element, Grodd the Super Gorilla, Star Sapphire. That one's kind of unique, but it says it's an original Flash story from the Golden Age of comics. So that is very unique. I didn't even know the Star Sapphire was in Golden Age, so that's very new. And then it's got Kid Flash story. Very cool. We have another Flash, 137, and this one is in VG because of the binding. The colors pop. And then it has some date writing on it, unfortunately, on the cover. It says, "While the two Flashes fight it out for the privilege of capturing me, I'll make my getaway." And this is a 12-cent issue featuring Vandal Savage. We then have 144 of Flash. This one I owned before. These next two I've owned before. But one of them is in bad shape. And the other one had a cut in the... I like bought it for $2. It was all intact, but it had half the cover cut off. So now I replaced it. So 144, it has the Flash running around in like a He's trying to stop a missile from landing. And it says, only my super speed can stop this nuclear bomb from falling, yet I can't keep racing around and around forever. Sooner or later, I'll drop from exhaustion and pow. So he's using his motion to keep the atomic nuclear weapon from falling. This one has a Captain Boomerang cover, which he's got to be my second favorite Rogue, not Heatwave. I just love Captain Boomerang, and most of my love for Captain Boomerang came later in life with the Suicide Squad. Just such an interesting character. Love to see him in the Suicide Squad movie just because it was like a dream come true to see one of my favorites on the big screen. So long, Flash. In another instant, my Boomerang Brigade will blast off and carry you into the endless orbit around the Earth. The day the Flash went into orbit. And I don't know if this is the issue where he strapped him to a boomerang and launched him into space. I think it is. And I have read that issue. We then get into... I really wish I would have kept these in order. But two Wonder Womans that are definitely in... God, one of them looks like in very fine. The other one looks like in fine. One of them's a 10-cent issue. It's Wonder Woman number 113. It says Wonder Woman battles the invasion of the Sphinx creatures. It's got a Sphinx and then lasers coming out of its eyes and shooting at Wonder Woman. Really nice cover. And then it says also Wonder Girl's birthday party. We then have Wonder Woman 139. This is a 12-cent issue. Really nice shape. And she's trying to stop a missile as it launches from a submarine. And she says, Hera, help me stop this underwater atomic invasion. Is the day Wonder Woman revealed her secret identity also her last? Read the startling answer within. Okay, now we get into some Marvel. Okay, and I just recently, like after the con, made a Ghost Rider purchase at my comic shop. I haven't bought them yet. I put them on, like, reserve. Because I have that 50% discount, and I didn't want to blow my wad right all at once, so I'll be getting them in the next week or two. And he's really good with me as far as letting me put books on hold because he knows I'm good for it. And so he's been getting a lot of collections. Because one thing I didn't notice is that when school starts, and I don't know if it's like older people getting money for their kids or if it's other people that want to sell their stuff just so they have money for the semester, but he gets a lot of collections in the fall, and he likes to buy them all, but he doesn't always like to do it because in the fall a lot less people are buying. So but he's got me, so sorry, I was drinking some Dr. Pepper 10. I like Dr. Pepper 10. All right, back to business. I bought Ghost Rider number 17, and this was from Baltimore Comic Con. And this one has one of my favorite characters, and in college, I went on a buying trend to get every appearance of Hellstrom, the son of Satan. Except for the Ghost Rider ones, but like when he was in Marvel Spotlight, Marvel Premiere. I was always like the character from Defenders, because Defenders was one of the first Marvel series that I bought every single issue of. And I've always dug this character, and now I'm getting Ghost Rider, and he's been in there since issue 1, because I read issue 1. And now he's in issue 17. It says Ghost Rider side by side by the son of Satan. He's saying to Ghost Rider, we came into this pit together, Blaze, and that's the way we're going out. A very private hell, as Ghost Rider is holding a woman in that's passed out. Looks like they're fighting demons. And then we got Marvel Spotlight number 29. This was one of the only Moon Knights that I was missing. I almost have a full run of Marvel Spotlight now. There's one more Moon Knight I think I'm missing, and maybe I'm not sure what else I'm missing. So this is Moon Knight, and it says, "You are a pawn in Conquer Lord's master plan," and it has a guy fighting Moon Knight. It looks very Kirby-esque. I'd be curious to look at the cover credits. It is Kirby. Inked by Milgram. I love this. And Moon Knight's blocking as as this Conquer Lord is throwing a mace at him. It looks like on a chessboard. And he's using a battle axe to block the mace, but it chips the mace. I mean, chips the battle axe, and the guy says, "And a pawn is doomed to die," like Moon Knight might be the pawn. And this one was what I was targeting in the con. It's the first appearance of Ghost Rider. It is Marvel Spotlight Ghost Rider number 5, which is his first appearance. Is he alive or dead? Legend is born. The most supernatural superhero in history. Fantastic. That's probably a fine copy. Looks really nice. There's 3 creases on the spine, but other than that, it's really beautiful. And then we got Marvel Spotlight Ghost Rider number 9. This completes my Marvel Spotlight Ghost Rider run, I believe. If not, I have one more. I can look it up real quick just to see what I'm missing, because Marvel Spotlight is almost complete. Marvel Spotlight number 1. I'm missing number 11, so that's a Ghost Rider appearance. I am right on that. And then I'm missing 25 through 27. 25 is a Sinbad issue. 26 is the villain of the Scarecrow, which I read a lot about in Back Issue Magazine, and that's when I started to buy all the Man-Wolf appearances, and he sounds fascinating, so I really need to get that book. 27 is a Submariner appearance that I'm missing, and then we get into 30. That's the last one I'm missing, and it is the Warriors 3. That cover looks so damn familiar, though. I wonder if I have it and I just didn't mark it. It's possible. And then I have the first appearance of Iron Fist. Marvel Premiere, I think I have all of them now, except for 2 Doctor Who. And man, I'm a completist, but those of you who know me know I'm not a fan of Doctor Who. And Marvel Premiere ran from 1972 to 1981. And it had 61 issues, and the only 2 issues I am missing now are number 58 and number 60. And they're both Doctor Who issues. So, and one aspect, I want to have them for completion, but in another one, I'm not in a hurry to do it. Because I'm not a Doctor Who fan. Because the first appearance is 57, and I have 57. And I'm missing 58 and 60. Because Doctor Who ran from issues 57 of Marvel Premiere to issue 60 of Marvel Premiere. And then issue 61 was Star-Lord. So, yeah, so close, but so far. And it had premieres of this, of course, of Iron Fist, which is the most popular one that came out. It was the most expensive one, too. It had a lot of Doctor Strange. The first issue had the first appearance of him, which is Adam Warlock, which I have. We had the first appearance of Iron Fist in there. We had the first appearance of 3D Man, which I have all these. First appearance of Wood God. Don't think that's a big deal. And Monarch Stalker. Not sure that guy ever appeared ever again. We have the first appearance of Ant-Man. I think it's Ant-Man 2. and the first appearance of Casey Lang in 47. So I have that. That's a good one to have because that one's been going up in price. We got a Falcon, but it's not his first appearance. It's kind of like one of his first solo appearance. Issue 50, which I do have, like I said, I'm only missing the Doctor Who's, is the first appearance of Alice Cooper. And you can find him around, lurking around a lot in Dynamite right now. And I buy those. Let's see if there's anything else in there. So most of the ones that are really, really good are in Marvel Spotlight. Like, you have a lot of Moon Knights and stuff in there. But you have a lot of really great Doctor Strange issues. And I think that's what I targeted early on when I got really into Doctor Strange. I really like Frank Brunner art. And this one has a lot of different artists, but all good stuff. They were mostly written by Gardner Fox, those Doctor Strange issues, and had a different artist. Some of the artists is Frank Brunner, P. Craig Russell, Sam Quiston, and Jim Starlin. So, yeah, good stuff. And the first appearance of Iron Fist that I just got was Roy Thomas and Gil Kane. But then the other issue, really interesting to know, and I guess I didn't pay attention when I bought it, was they were 16, 17, and 18, which are Iron Fist issues, are drawn by Larry Hama. How about that? So that's it. We're going to talk about Mike M's weekly reads, and thank you for listening to the collector segment, and we'll talk to you later. Bye. Okay, welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. This is episode 41, and there are two things that I want to talk today about. I just got back from a trip back home. It was a short trip, but we got to go to the state fair. It was really cool. And during that time, a friend of mine, really close friend in high school and part of college, we went our separate ways, and he got into a car accident and was killed. And it's really bothering me because we kind of didn't make peace. In our sophomore year, we had like an argument kind of thing and just never got back to talking to one another. And now he's gone, and it's really bothering me. But before I get into my reads, I want to talk about a couple of things that happened in the comic industry just this past weekend. There is the Valiant cat cosplay thing that went on, and it caused a hell of a commotion on the interwebs. And it's things like this that really bother me, because a publisher cannot do anything without causing fandom to go nuts. And in this case, it was really for a good cause. Like, you know, it was for the Brooklyn Animal Rescue Coalition. Part of their proceeds of the covers that they sell are going to go to this, to help animals, and I'm really, really into animals. I love animals. I'm not a cat person, but I love animals. So the only reason that I'm probably not a cat person is because when Barb and I were in college, I would go to their house, and they had a cat, and I was highly allergic to cat. It's weird because dog dander I could deal with, like, all kinds of different dogs, but cat, for some reason, if like I touch cat and then I like rub my eyes or whatever, I will welt, or I'll get, you know, bumps all over, hives. And but if I don't touch them, I'm okay. Like a cat just next to me isn't gonna cause me to get bad. It's if they're rubbing in something and I touch my, you know, eyes or something with, after touching the cat. But anyway, a lot of people were taking this opportunity to kind of put down Valiant, and it kind of bothers me. And it bothers me because Dinesh and them, they're really good people, and they should be able to do certain things without having the community go haywire. And they do things to try to spark interest, whether that's with the vocal minority that goes apeshit over everything, or if it's with, they put something out there and people freak. And right now, people are freaking out because EXO's ending, Eternal Warrior's ending, which I'm really disappointed in, because if you would have said it's ending after the first four issues of the story arc, I would have said, okay, let's bring something else in. But after I saw the build of what Venditti was doing, and then jumping into the sixth issue, which I think started the Labyrinth, I was blown away, where they brought the Immortal Enemy. And I remember the Immortal Enemy from the old Valiant universe, even from the Acclaim. Acclaim had the comic book Eternal Warriors. And I always remember the cover of one of the Eternal Warriors. It was like a quarterly book, where it had a female on the cover, and she had two distinctively different eye colors. And this book focused on the Immortal Enemy, and I fell in love with it. Like, the Eternal Warrior went from my least favorite book to my most favorite book. And this is why I love comics, and this is why, like, I don't quit on books. Because if I didn't get to experience that, I would feel differently about it, and I would have left. But because I saw the build and I saw the payoff, it made me just love it. Like, even the first arc, I was like, wow, this is what I really didn't care for. I need to reassess what that was about. And that's why I love comics, is, yeah, you'll hit some times where your mind is not in the moment, but if you see the big picture, you will change your mind. And I know a lot of you don't have that opportunity, and I'm fortunate to be able to read as much as I can and buy as much as I can, because some people are on fixed budgets and they have to make tough decisions. They have to really assess every issue, like, hey, all these new things are coming out, and is this book really floating my boat? And if it doesn't, I have to quit it. So I understand that. But I am in the position where I'm fortunate enough to hang on and ride the roller coaster and enjoy it that much, because I've always talked about, if everything was fantastic, it would just seem like a flat line. And I need to experience the bad along with the good, along with the mediocre. It's all part of the history of the comic for me. But anyway, my thought on the cats is, it's a variant. This is the Batgirl situation all over again, where everybody on the internet went apeshit. We lost a good cover. We never got that cover. We didn't even get a variant cover. We got the shitty robot cover with the yellow background. And we could have had a Batgirl cover with the Joker on it, with a gun to her head, and yes, that's violence. You could say it's violence towards women, but the Joker's violent. He doesn't discriminate. He's violent towards everybody. And what people don't understand is, the Joker Killing Joke is in canon in the New 52. The only time they try to do a double take is when there was the villain, the Fugue. And they try to, like, leave it open-ended, like the Fugue might have implanted this vision in her head, and it was subject to interpretation. But they clearly, on the Rebirth, said that this was canon. And it was canon in Gail Simone's, and it was canon all the way going back to the Killing Joke through Birds of Prey. So I think that cover needed to be out, but now these cat covers are there, and they're variants. Okay, so let's go to the Batgirl variant. The Batgirl variant, you didn't have to buy it. If it offended you, don't buy it. But I can guarantee you, if they put that variant against the butt-ugly, bunny-eared robot Batman with the yellow background, and then next to it you had the Joker with Batgirl there, which one do you think will sell more? I guarantee you that cover B, the variant, would sell more than cover A. I guarantee it. And I would have bought that cover too, because it was awesome. It was an Albuquerque cover. And they will never, ever see it. And we'll probably see, like, hacks of it. But he pulled it because somebody complained. And then there was violence towards the complainer. And a lot of people got offended and all that stuff. But you can't do anything in comics anymore. There's always somebody there to bitch and destroy it. You need to let these people fucking create. If you don't like it, step off. Go find something else that you enjoy. It's these people have to have an opportunity to show us what they're capable of doing. And in this case, if you don't like the cat covers, yeah, you might be a Valiant completist, but you don't have to have a cat cover. And who knows, those cat covers might be rare, and then you'll regret it later on when they're selling for a lot. But what this has is, like, these cat cosplay, it could bring in another set of fans into comic books. And it's probably a fan base that is going to be very, very different. And that's cool. It might be not to your liking, but it's if it brings somebody else into comics that and you leave, well, at least there's balance. The problem comes in is if you leave and nobody else picks up your spot, then comics will dwindle. But I'm back into the Valiant now. I'm caught up on Bloodshot. I'm working my way on XO. Bloodshot's been amazing. I am amazed by the series. I got off that Louis LaRosa arc, and I just wish it was in black and white, because I think his art would have been a billion times better if I could see the gray tones. But it is what it is. Like, you do have artists from time to time where their work is muted by coloring, and sometimes the opposite happens. Sometimes the colorist enhances the art if you see the before and after. So yeah, I'm okay with where Valiant is, and I think in the numbers they're pretty much the same. Like, they're what they end up doing is injecting something new. It sells good first two copies, and then it drops. And the interesting thing is what if these hardcore fans, the ones that were there from the beginning, start to drop off? Then, and I think a lot of those people are the ones that are buying all the variants. I don't buy variants anymore. I'm done with variants, unless it's DC. But I was there for a while, and then I was like, you know what? These are $6 and $10, and I'm like, I don't even open these again. And it's kind of going against my principle of what a comic is. It's almost like having a CGC book to have a variant. I don't know. Sometimes the cover is just so striking, you have to have it. But yeah, that's things I get discouraged with on the internet, and things that bug me. And this is my diary, so I get to bitch and complain a little bit. The funny thing is, I bitch and complain about people bitching and complaining. So that's kind of ironic, isn't it? I don't know. Comics just bring me a sense of peace. And when I get involved in people bringing down my peace, it bugs me. But that is life, and that is the social media thing that we're in today. Like, social media has its benefits. Without social media, I wouldn't have the best friends that I have today. So I'll take that over all the crap that's on the interwebs. But if I stick to my wall, I'm usually safe. Because those that post on my wall, I think they know me. And it's usually a safe haven for me, is just to stay on my wall and not venture out. If I venture out, and I do venture out from time to time, there's some interesting stuff out there. I always get disappointed. Because then you get on the notifies, and I get notified that somebody posted, and then I go look, and there's always some jackass trying to bring things down. And I don't know why I get pissed off at certain things like that. But I guess life is too short, and entertainment is not something I want to spend time with, dealing with disappointment and stuff like that. I want to celebrate it. I want to celebrate entertainment, whether it be TV, movies, video games, comics, especially comics, toys. I want to celebrate what I like rather than focus on what I don't like. And I want to take what I don't like and focus on what I do like. That's my philosophy. But enough of that. Let's get into Mike M's Weekly Reads. So this week was, what you're going to see is a weird pattern. And I'll tell you what's happened is I've been so into DC lately that you're going to see a lot of it just pop up from week to week. And not only that, but I'm doing a weekly DC podcast with Daryl Taylor, and I'm going to keep trying to get it out weekly because I enjoy it. I enjoy talking to Daryl about things. When you actually can take a comic book and discuss it at a detail level, you will discover things that you might not have known was there. And it turns into something that was maybe mediocre to something that was great, or it could even maybe make you change your mind the other way. Say maybe this wasn't so great. But I think in the terms of who I pick to be on my shows, I tend to pick people. I mean, you look at who I podcast with, and I tend to pick people that are on the positive side. I don't pick anybody to counter me. I pick people that I can share my love of the medium with. And usually when I pick people for a podcast, I see this glimmer in their eye and excitement. And that's who I latch on to. I don't latch on to a hater. I latch on to the people that are passionate, and they find the beauty in this medium, because there's so much to enjoy and experience, and so many levels to experience. But enough of my jibber jabber. It was kind of on a downer because of my friend's death. I feel bad that I'm getting pretty old, and I feel bad that I don't know what he's done for that last part of his life. I was there for the first part, maybe not even the first part, but a good portion of it when we were kids, and then I know nothing. I don't know how his family's doing, other than I'm also friends with his brother, and I still talk to him from time to time. But I don't know, like, what he was doing for a living, if he had a girlfriend, if he was going to get married, or what was going on with him, what he enjoyed. I lost total track, and now he's dead. It just bugs me. But anyway, enough of my whining. Let's get to the weekly reads. So we're talking about, you're going to see a lot of DC, yes, but I'll try to spatter in other things. This week we had 20 books, and this is for July 4th through July 10th. I don't know why there wasn't that many books, but sometimes it is that way because life is in the way, and maybe it was because of the holiday weekend and I was doing something that weekend. But at the bottom, we have 3 out of 5. 3 out of 5s, I want to stress that I enjoyed it. But what I try to do is I try to get books that some of my friends do. And I'm not really being tough on them. It's just that what they're doing is not in my personal wheelhouse. I am not an all-ages fan. I think the last all-ages book that I enjoyed was Billy Batson and the Shazam tale, or whatever it was, Tales of Shazam, by the guy who did Hero Bear, and then whoever took over after that, Balsar and Franco, I think. But I'm not into the all-ages thing too much. I'm almost in the opposite, mature readers, but, I enjoyed this. It was, Cash and Carry. It's a book that's now being solicited as a trade through Action Lab, but it was a Kickstarter, and I didn't buy the Kickstarter because I didn't get in on it in time, but Sean Pryor is, you know, part of the creative power behind Cash and Carry, and I love Sean. This book was really good. I would recommend it to anybody that's looking for a book that they can share with their kids. I think they would enjoy it as a starter to get kids into comics and stuff like that. The art is good. The story was solid. So, like, I recommend it. It just wasn't in my dystopian superhero genre, sci-fi genre. It was kind of its own thing. They solve mysteries together, and they're kids in school. So Cash and Carry got a 3 out of 5, which means I enjoyed it. I was glad I read it. The next one is Justice League Rebirth. This is interesting because I enjoyed this one, but it didn't rock my boat, and it was because the Rebirth issue felt a lot like something I've read before, just a different take on it, and it's all those Starrio books you read, except it wasn't Starrio. It was a different one, and it was basically assimilating the population. And it's weird, though, because the current story arc is kind of like dealing with the same sort of thing. So maybe it's related and I just didn't get the linkage. Maybe that linkage will be determined at a later point in time as we get close to the first story arc ending. The next one that's a 4 out of 5 is... Okay, now we jump into the 4 out of 5s as Batman 66 meets Steed and Miss Pill. For those of you that don't know, there's a lot of company crossovers going on right now. We have IDW going with Batman properties. They just did Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, solicited by DC Comics. Upcoming solicitation, we have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles animated with Batman animated. So it goes both ways. They usually do it like even in the Marvel days, and we'll talk about that in an upcoming issue because that's in this issue as well. You have Batman Daredevil, Daredevil Batman, and then the associating company does that. But this Batman 66 is a crossover with Boom Studios because they have the Avengers property right now. So DC is publishing this one. And Boom is publishing another Batman-related book, but it's Lumberjanes Gotham Academy. Makes a lot of sense based on what Lumberjanes is and based on what Gotham Academy is. And you'll probably know that I'm not, like, a huge fan of Gotham Academy. It kind of falls into that not my wheelhouse kind of thing. But the thing I like about it is it's because it's in that Batman universe, it changes the game plan. And because it's DC, and I want to have every DC comic since 1973, so it falls into that. Like, I'm going to get it. It's very different than if it's an indie property and I don't have to get it. DC, I feel compelled to know everything there is about the company and the heroes, and it doesn't end with just that print line. It goes into the kids' books. So I will buy Super Friends when it comes out. If it's a cartoon base like Scooby-Doo, no, I might not buy that in Looney Tunes. But if it's in the DC proper, I will buy it. And then if it's Wildstorm, I will buy it if it existed. Vertigo, I will buy it if it exists. So that's just my strategy of what DC is. It's everything, all their publication lines, except for some of their kids' books. That is not in my thing, and it falls outside of the superhero. If it's in the superhero thing, I'm getting it. So you know where I'm coming from. But this Batman 66 meets Steet and Miss Pill is fascinating because I watched all the Batman 66. I'm not that old, but I watched it all in syndication. Back in high school, maybe it was late middle school, but I think it was early high school, we got like our first Fox station, and Fox at that time would have some original programming, but during the day, everything would be syndicated, and there'd be older shows, and they would show Batman 66. And I thought it was the most campy thing that I've ever watched. But there was something about the experience that I liked. And this comic captures that TV show. It captures, you could picture Adam West speaking and Burt Ward speaking and the villain Cesar Romero, all those Burgess Meredith. You could feel it. And they're doing a fantastic job with it. And it's making me interested in Steet and Miss Pill. And I am not a big fan of British TV. I don't know why. I can't explain it. Don't watch Doctor Who. I used to have to watch it when I was younger because my dad liked to watch it on PBS. And I was like, oh, God, please change the channel. And later on, even when he comes over, sometimes BBC America or whatever will be playing it, and he'll put it on there, and I'm like, oh, God, I can't take it. I don't know. It's just a psychological thing. I am glad that Doctor Who is over here and that people love it. It's just not for me. But the Avengers thing seems a little like something that I would enjoy. And I'm glad that this series does exist. And it involves some villains that they introduce that I don't even know what they're called. Like, they have these Cybermen. And they're a bunch of robots that they end up fighting. And then from our side, we have Catwoman that's being hired by this organization that Steet and Miss Pill know. And it's just really good. The setup and the art is very much like the series. I really enjoyed it. So that's why it falls into 4 out of 5. I really enjoyed it. Then we get into the Rebirth. We have Green Arrow number 2. This is where he's almost dead. Shadow and Emiko throw his body into the ocean. They team up with the Ninth Circle. Diggle's involved, and he loses his corporation. And it plays into the rest of the story arc, which Green Arrow to me is very entertaining. I'm really liking it. It feels a little bit like TV, feels a little bit like its own entity. I like the fact they're using Amico in shadow like they did in the 52. So I'm happy with that. And I'm really enjoying it. Like I enjoyed the latest issue that just had Amico in it. I was perfectly content. But I know others are they feel like they need something new, and this isn't that. It's too much of the same. So, I can't argue with it because that it was so some of the stuff being shown now is close to the TV show, it's close to the 50 New 52. So I can see where they're coming from, but I've been really enjoying it. The next one was my least favorite Aquaman, but it's still a 4 out of 5, so that tells you where Aquaman's been. But this was the showdown between Black Manta and Aquaman, and it was so uncharacteristically not to my liking, because Aquaman, who isn't like somebody that likes to talk his way through stuff, was there being diplomatic, talking Black Manta out of his, killing him and his wife and everybody else. And Aquaman had killed his father, so he's very vengeful. And he basically listened to him. He's like, if you kill me, it was like that Batman thing, if you kill me, then you what are you gonna do with the rest of your life if I'm the only thing keeping you alive and all this other stuff. It just felt really weird. But since this issue, like the issues prior and the issues after, I felt really good about. This one just felt really uncharacteristically not Black Manta and Aquaman, not Aquaman. And I don't know why that was, but as a story, I still enjoyed the hell out of it. So it's a 4 out of 5. We get into New Avengers, so we got a Marvel one. A New Avengers number 12. And this one I liked because it was Maria Hill chewing out John Garrett, who's kind of like one of the clones of man, I can't even think of his name. Sergeant Fury and the Helicommandos. Okay, Mike, think who's. I wanted to say Happy Hogan, but that's the Iron Man thing. What the hell am I not remembering his name? He's the guy with the red mustache and the red hair, and he's been cloned, or he has whatever S.H.I.E.L.D. calls the clones. But anyway, this John Garrett was getting chewed out by Maria Hill. It was a Civil War tie-in. It's got the Maker plotting against DaCosta, who is Sunspot, and DaCosta is plotting against S.H.I.E.L.D. Oh, his name is Dugan, because there's a bunch of Dugans everywhere, and part of Dugan too was in the Howling Commandos, where he had the monsters that they released their series, and that was really good. I'm enjoying this series. It's really bizarre. It doesn't feel like an Avengers book, but what is there, I am really enjoying. None of the Avengers books feel like Avengers books right now, but they're their own entities, and I'm enjoying them. So we got Green Lanterns number 2. This one I liked more. It's decreasing in my liking, because it's the same thing. It doesn't advance very far. But back in number 2, I was still. Still a big before I started realizing they're repeating themselves over and over again. This is where Jessica tries to rescue her sister from Rage. Like she's got the rage going on. Simon and Jessica call for help, and the rage is taking over the entire city. It's weird because they were having this rage machine on Earth, and I don't know if it's coincidence or what, but in Hal Jordan. In the Green Lantern Corps, they have the fear machine or the fear engine, very similar to what they were trying to do with the rage machine. So I don't know if it's related or not, or the Red Lanterns and the Sinestro Corps doing very similar things. Coincidence or not? That's the question. The The next one is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 6. This one, I don't know why I like it, because I don't watch the TV show, and this is kind of like the TV show. But this was the conclusion to the Coulson protocols. Coulson, and he's the agent that was in the movies that's kind of like an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and now he's in this series as the lead character. And the protocols were something that he was doing, something like Batman's always doing. He was keeping files on it, all these heroes and all their weaknesses, and that's what this arc was about. And this was conclusion to that arc, and it was really good. The next one, I don't know if I covered this on Gotham by Geeks. I think it was. I don't know if I covered both of them. I think I covered both of them. But I had read Daredevil Batman, which had them fighting against Two-Face and Mr. Hyde, and neural net technology, which I really enjoyed because I used to work in that technology, so it was kind of cool to see. And then I read this for Retro, Daredevil number 91. This is from Volume 1. Black Widow leaves Daredevil because he never bothered to thank her, and he was acting really abrasive towards her, to tell you the truth, even though she saved his life. And this has the new Mr. Fear is going after Daredevil, and he doesn't last very long. He actually dies at the end of this issue. Spoiler, but it's Volume 1. It was from the 70s, so he thought he had his flying contraption on and jumped off a building and pretty much splattered and died. But great art, great story, enjoyed it. The next one was DC's version, Batman Daredevil, and this is where the Scarecrow tried to take over New York City by taking out the Kingpin. Very unusual to pair the Scarecrow and the Kingpin, in my opinion. The other one had more of a, you know, Two-Face and Mr. Hyde, because they're both characters that lose control of their own bodies. And they have duality in common. There's not a lot in common to me between Scarecrow and Kingpin, and it was kind of uncharacteristic that Scarecrow was trying to become a Kingpin in New York by taking over New York City. But this one was done better. It was a better story, even though it felt different. And they're related to each other. Like the one that came out second, and I can't remember if it was the Marvel one. I think it was the Marvel one. It cross-references the first team-up. So it's kind of neat how they did that. Got Batman number 2, where he takes on Solomon Grundy. Oh, this one I had an issue with. This is Tom King and Finch. And there's only one scene I had an issue with here. And I couldn't get my mind off of it. It just goes to show that I have my own weird things. But I still rated it a 4 out of 5. But I couldn't, as I read the comic, my mind kept circling back to this one scene. And there's a scene where Gotham and Gotham Girl are chasing Solomon Grundy. Solomon Grundy, born on a Monday. You know, doing that stuff. Solomon Grundy is about 800 pounds. And he's pretty damn strong. And there's a scene depicted there where I think it's meant to be a flip and using his own weight against him. So Solomon Grundy's running. Batman kind of comes up from the bottom of him and flips him. But the way the artist depicts it, it looks like he's using one hand to lift Solomon Grundy. And I don't care how good Batman is, there's no way he's going to lift Solomon Grundy with one hand. It kind of bothered me. But the story was really good. What else did this have in it? It had the Hugo Strange and the Monster Man. And the Monster Man we haven't heard of. And I thought it was related to the Hugo Strange thing, but now I'm starting to question that. And Batman's trying to reluctantly work hard with Gotham and Gotham Girl to get them trained. I even think he chews them out because, if I remember correctly, there was a bystander there And he was like, Solomon Grundy would have killed him if you would have kept on this pursuit. And he was pretty mad about it. The next one's a Howard Chaykin book. I already talked about one, Midnight of the Soul. This is where he goes after his wife. She's cheating on him. And she is hunted for a murder. And the story just keeps to get deeper. And this is about a guy that was in World War II, comes back home and with his wife and her brother, or appears to be her brother, and find out that she's kind of like a whore. She's being a prostitute. So, and the guy that she's with is murdered, and now she's on the run, and she's getting blamed for it. So, really enjoying Midnight of a Soul. That is an Image book. And then we have the last 4 out of 5, which is Superman number 2. This one's been consistently awesome. This is Clark continues training his son, and the Eradicator shows up for the first time. And I already know how all this turns out, but I thoroughly enjoyed this series. There was only one that I didn't care for, and it's because it just was weird. It like interrupted the flow, but I'll get into that in a future episode. We get to the 5 out of 5s. We have Captain America, Sam Wilson, which had the America cops and a Civil War tie-in where Sam sides with Iron Man, which is, I guess it made sense here. And U.S. Agent shows up, which is the thing I'm really liking about what Nick Spencer's doing is it has a Mark Grenwald feel. Like, he puts back in the Serpent Society, Diamondback, D-Man. He's like doing and threading stories like Grenwald does, and that's my Cap era. That is where I started. The 60 Cent era of Cap is where I fell in love with Cap. It's where I started to go to the spinner rack and say, man, I got to go back on the Wednesday. It was Friday back then. I think Friday or Saturday, the drugstore would put the new comics in the spinner rack. And I went back, and I would try to get there to make sure I got the next issue. And it's one of the first titles that I was doing that for, especially from Marvel. There were two of them that were like that, where I started to get, well, I'll say three. There was Captain America that I would try to get it monthly, Daredevil, and Fantastic Four. And Fantastic Four was around that Byrne time frame. So, and then there were the great miniseries during that time frame that I got off the spinner rack, which was like Hercules, Bob Layton, and Frank Miller and Claremont Wolverine. I think it was when they started to kind of do an explosion of 4-issue miniseries. But those were still on the spinner rack. Can you believe that? That's how far into the spinner rack days that I actually go before I actually discovered the comic shop. Also, I want to thank everybody that gave me feedback on the last episode. They liked the discussion of the history of the shops that I went through, and Paul Price especially, who wrote up a long thing, but I was on vacation and I didn't get to read it, and I can't find it now, so I need to try to hook up with him and see what happened. But I want to read his little timeline of comic shops, because I'm really interested in it personally, and if I'm able to get it back, I'd like to share it on this show just to give somebody else's point of view on how they evolved in the comic shop. And then there was a lot of discussion about us talking about the collection of the Jesse James collection on you know, my threads of the show, and the things that came that Campbell and Martin mentioned that I mentioned that I think is important. It's not really important to us as collectors to understand that Jesse James procured this used collection. From our perspective, and they all agreed, it's way more interesting to understand where the guy who had the collection to begin with, what happened to him? Why he had to get rid of it? Did he pass away? What happened? So, got a lot of feedback on that, and I want to thank people for giving feedback, because that means a lot. We talked about Captain America, Sam Wilson, number 11. Really enjoyed it. And there you go with U.S. Agent. He just throws things at, and it feels like a continuous story, but it feels like all these threads are happening, and I just love that Nick Spencer's doing. I will say that I could agree slightly that he puts a lot of politics, what I think are his own politics, in the comic book, and it turns some people off. It doesn't turn me off. And maybe it's because I tend to fall on his way of thinking. Maybe that's why I'm not affected politically. And talking politics is ridiculous anyway, because I don't think I could ever change anybody's mind, and I don't think they're going to change my mind. So why do we even talk about it? We all are going to do what we're going to do. So the last 5 out of 5 was Daryl. I haven't finished it yet, but there was one DC Noise episode where he said, "Man, I'm starting to read Brightest Day, and I want to talk about it." And man, I was having trouble remembering things. Like, I remember key things about it, but I started to read the hardcover again. I have the singles, but I wanted to readdress it, and I rated that 5 out of 5. And I just, this is my second read. I read 0 through 5, and I really, really loved it. Revisiting it, such a great weekly series. I'm a real fan of what DC is doing right now. It's giving me comics twice monthly. I feel like I'm getting more into the story, and I'm not losing momentum, and I like it. I really like it. So that's it. This has been Mike M's Weekly Reads, only 20 comics for the week of July 4th through July 10th. If you want to reach me, you can reach me on Twitter at Mike Myers Brunch, or you can reach me at email at mike@comicbooknoise.com. If I do share, let me know in the email, if you send me an email, if you do not want me to discuss what was exchanged in the email. So if you're okay with it, I'm going to assume that I can talk about your email on this show. But if you put something in that email and you don't, it's between me and you for some reason, put on there, please don't discuss this on the show, or don't mention me, and I won't do it. I'll just read the email and I'll answer you back, and we'll just talk that way. You can find it at Geek Brunch Podcast. You can leave comments there, as well as Geek Brunch Podcast on Facebook. Click the like button and follow it there. Please leave an iTunes review if you get a chance. That's the fuel for this podcast. Don't get paid or anything. And matter of fact, I would do this even if you don't, because this is my... I don't write down anything for this show. I just sit here and I talk to myself, because it's almost like a diary. I get a sense of peace out of it, actually. Just recording myself, and it's also helping me think about all the stuff that I've read, all the topics that are on the internet, whatever, the collections that I'm acquiring, and all that stuff. So please leave an iTunes review, because it helps others. If you can, and you like the show, if you see the tweet or the Facebook thread, if you could share it. Some of you are already doing that, like Brian Rygate always shares on Facebook. I really, really appreciate that. I try to do that for his show, Comics and History. I think you should check it out, especially now, because those of you that know me know that I absolutely love Wonder Woman, and he's doing a series on that. He's up to George Perez. So thank you, Brian. And then there's several people on Twitter that always help me out by retweeting, and I really appreciate that. I try to thank you on Twitter when you do it. So that's it, and I hope you enjoyed episode 41, and I will try to liven it up next episode. I'll talk to you later. Bye.